Happy day. I'm Liza, your healing mentor. I used to say, all I need in life is for my kids to be happy and healthy. The problem was they weren't happy and they weren't healthy. Both my kids had anxiety, depression, and even Lyme disease. Then one day my daughter told her therapist, what would make me happy is if my mom was happy. So I went on a journey to find my own personal happiness. When I finally became happy, my own kids accelerated in their own healing journey. Now I share my stories, my mindset, and other inspirational healers with you. Let's heal one story at a time. Happy day. Welcome to Very Happy Stories. You know what I love about my audience and my followers? You guys just keep asking questions. You're constantly advocating for your children and striving to heal your children or maybe even yourself. And that lends itself to a lot of questions. And today I have a lot of answers. I had an interview with Dr. Diane Mueller. She is a physician who actually healed from mold illness and Lyme disease. And today her focus is really on finding the root causes of your symptoms and treating the whole body, including the mind. She works with people worldwide, including children, and she has a new book out called It's Not in Your Mind. Dr. Mueller has such a great mindset in how to heal from these chronic conditions, but mostly I think you're going to find her perspective hopeful and inspirational and validating. And she is here today to answer so many common questions that moms have, so many questions that I had. So I can't wait for you to hear this interview. Let's dive in to Dr. Mueller's very happy story. Happy day. Welcome, Dr. Mueller, to the podcast.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to chat with you today.
I have been looking forward to this so much. So thank you. I know that you have a book coming out and you've lived this whole life of Lyme, chronic illness, autoimmune. So I can't wait for you to share your story. And actually, why don't we just start right there? How did you end up in this space of mold, Lyme, IBS, all the things?
You know, like so many of us that get into this chronic disease world as doctors and clinicians, it was my own journey, right? So I started as a young child with chronic constipation, and it was not being able to be solved by conventional world at all. I had an IBS label and it's basically like, you're bloated. You can't go to the bathroom. We're going to stick this label on you. There's no real reason why this must be you, but it was so bad. Like, you know, in like high school, when I would travel more, I was finding that I was starting to have to carry and bring with me on vacations, like multiple different pant size, because I get so bloated. Sometimes it was like I gained 30 pounds overnight, right? It was so uncomfortable. So that led me into holistic medical school to get my doctorate in naturopathic medicine and a second doctorate in acupuncture and oriental medicine, just largely as a way of trying to figure myself out, right? And then what wound up happening is in school, I started actually getting sicker and sicker and sicker. And I didn't really know why. I was having really scary symptoms. Like some days I was having a hard time walking and had to have people carry me. I had moments of literally getting stuck on the toilet because I was in so much pain that would come on suddenly. It was like felt like my legs were getting sawed off.
Wow.
So I'd have to have like somebody come and like pick me up, basically help me up. It's crazy stuff. Memory loss, forgetting where I lived, like crazy neurological damage in my, that came back, but in my hands and all throughout my body where I was just losing feeling. So it was when I was in school and I was like seeing some of our clinicians at school, it was really easy to just give the label of medical school syndrome. Right? Because a lot of people have weird things happen when you are up all night studying, you're sleep deprived and all that. And it wasn't until I got out of school and my colleagues were, you know, several months after were like, we're feeling like we're getting better. We're engaged in life again. Things are going well. And I was getting dramatically worse. And that was when it kind of was just a red light or warning bell in my head to say, oh, this is not medical school syndrome. And that's when I did more investigative tests and I found Lyme disease, I found mold illness buildup, a lot of other infections that go with insects. And that's when my healing journey really began.
Holy cow. Yeah, I can totally relate. When my kids started getting sick, it was around puberty, you know, and a lot of times, you know, doctors will say, well, it's the hormones, you know, and that's, but yes, it's just so easy to dismiss things. So you were finally diagnosed. Did everything come at once, or was it kind of like one thing after another? First of all, I can't even imagine you got through medical school. I mean, this sounds so debilitating. So, I mean, I am so impressed with that, but tell us a little bit about how you got diagnosed and what you started treating. Where did you start?
Yeah, it was, you know, it's like sheer will to get through medical school. I remember the number of times I called my parents and I was like, just bawling, like, I'm not going to make it. But somehow I did. And that was amazing. And really, like, when I got to that point, once my colleagues were getting better, like in that part of the story, I realized there was a problem. I just started testing as many things as I could think of. So as far as figuring out some of the things that weren't like basic things that I'd already tested in school, like, yeah, my thyroid wasn't working well, my adrenals would make our stress hormones were all messed up. Like, so that part I already knew, but I was doing all of this other additional tests at the same time. So symptom wise, there was definitely a level of creeping where it wasn't necessarily all at once. Things did get worse. But it's really, you know, the brain, and I see this in the clients I work with so much, like the brain so easily orientates to what's wrong in the body. It's not like we wake up every day and we're like, wow, I don't have pain today. I don't have a headache. I don't, you know, it's like, we don't think about those things that we don't have in our body. We are oriented only to, oh crap, I do have a headache today, or I do have pain in my body, those kind of things. So as far as like the progression, I do believe in like my memory of it, that it was gradual, but it's hard to say exactly because the brain just is so oriented to, I have a problem, I have a problem, I have a problem. Is it worse? Is it better? It's really hard to say from a subjective standpoint.
Yes, I totally, and it's hard to tease things out, but ultimately with your root cause, do you believe your root cause was Lyme and mold together? Or like, what do you think, with everything that you know, what was the root cause of your decline in health?
Yeah. Thank you for this question. I think it's a really important one because this is, it's like one of the number one things that I hear people say with their own health, their children's health, like, I want to know the root cause. And I can tell you guys that I have never in one single patient of mine with chronic disease, it's very different with acute, but with chronic disease, I've never seen cause actually be a, you know, a singular word. Like, it's always causes, right? And if we're looking at this,
true. Right?
And some of it is even how these diseases manifest, right? So Lyme from a bacteria called Borrelia is what actually causes Lyme disease. Or mold illness, where we have toxins from mold building up in our body, as well as a lot of other problems out there. Like, they, what they can do is they can cause neuroinflammation. It's widespread neuroinflammation. And this is inflammation in the brain. This is inflammation in the nerves throughout the body. So because of the widespread connectivity of the neurological system, we can start seeing widespread subsequent things fall apart, right? So we even see, because of the nature of how these types of illnesses affect the brain, we can actually see that we get low thyroid, you know, from having Lyme and mold, right? Our thyroid can crash. Our adrenals, where we secrete cortisol and other hormones like DHEA that are really building to our musculature, those can get out of balance. Our sex hormones can get out of balance. Our melatonin, our sleep hormone gets out of balance. So we start having insomnia and all these different things. So that's why when it's causes, it becomes a little bit, you know, difficult, as you said earlier, to like tease these things apart because of how the web of all the connectivity of the body. So like in the grand scheme of things, I had well over a dozen things come up on my lab tests when I, you know, was out of balance. And we could say they, in many ways, were all part of the cause, right? They're all root causes that needed to be addressed in order to restore wellness.
Wow. I think your response is just on point. I mean, it's the reality. It's not one thing. And to complicate it too. And I think mothers and people in general, they're like, well, just, I want cause and effect. Like, what caused this? What is the treatment? And we do have to pause and really accept that when it comes to complex illness or chronic illness, that it's never going to be one thing. I get it. I hear what you're saying. And what's so interesting is with both of my children who had similar bacterial infections, Lyme, Bartonella, Babesia, they both reacted completely different, you know? And my son does have thyroid issues from it. And, but my daughter had more psychological, you know, issues. And so even it manifests different. Everybody's different. So I very much hear what you're saying. So it lends, so two areas I want to go down. One is, when do you recommend parents test children? So that's one thing I want to talk about. And then I kind of want to talk about what does treatment look like? Because again, it's not always one thing that's causing all of these things. So that's like a whole other thing. So let's take the first part. When would you recommend a parent test their child for Lyme and or mold, or do you do both together? What's your mindset on that?
So there's obvious things and then there's less obvious things. So let's talk about them both. So in a situation, for example, where a child is getting bitten, you know, has gotten bit by a tick. Like, we do know now there's very, very limited studies that show that Lyme can actually be transmitted in mosquitoes and fleas. So still not more, right?
Thank you. I talk about this and people think I'm cuckoo. And I also heard lice.
I haven't seen a study on lice, but I would not be surprised.
Okay.
So I'll look to see if I can see, you know, find any studies on that. So but yeah, I mean, it's, I appreciate that you know that, because it's a really big problem with people being like, oh, if I haven't gotten bit by a tick, or my child has got bit by a tick, like, I don't need to think about this. I mean, who hasn't been bitten by a mosquito? Maybe there's a few people out there, but most of us have had mosquito bites, right?
True.
So that's a big thing to know. But if you are bitten by a tick, you know, or your child is bitten by a tick, definitely consider Lyme. You can actually save the ticks. And there's tick testing sites, one's called Ticknology, that you can actually send the tick to, and then they'll actually test to see if the tick is contained, you know, if it contains anything like Lyme. The other thing from a when standpoint, from a, you know, obvious thing to make sure that people know, is that Lyme is also in many, in acute situations, it's often talked as having this bull's eye lesion, this kind of target lesion type of rash that comes with it. Most people don't actually get that rash.
Right.
So if it's there, yes, it's Lyme. You want to, you know, go, or likely Lyme, you want to go down that route, but definitely make sure that you're, you know, not thinking in the route of, oh, no rash, no tick bite, therefore no Lyme, right? We got to get that out of our brains.
Yep.
So then when else are we going to be, what are the less obvious things? You know, when else are we going to be considering testing our child? One is, we do know, and I always say this with such caution because the moms I work with, it's just such a tender thing, is we do know that we can actually pass, you know, in utero, if mom is sick and mom has, you know, active Lyme in her body, she can actually pass through the placenta Lyme. So I always say that with caution because, you know, sometimes it's just such a tender thing, right? It's like, oh my gosh, could have that happened? And yes, it could have if you were sick. So if you were sick during pregnancy, that would be a time to, you know, consider this. By sick, I mean like chronic type of symptoms that look like Lyme, chronic fatigue, fibromyalgia, headaches, migraines, insomnia, these sorts of things, brain fog. And so, you know, and just so you know, because this is a tender topic, like this is like, we can basically make Lyme like chicken pox, right? It's very scary when you read stuff on the internet, but for all intents and purposes, we can make it like Lyme does not exist in you or your child. So if you are a mom and you're listening, you're like, oh my gosh, that could have been me. It's going to be okay. You know, this is a treatable, reversible type of scenario, right?
Yeah. And I just wanted to add, I learned that I do have Lyme I am one of those moms that unknowingly passed it down to my children. I think if you have more than one kid, yes, you all could have been bit at a family vacation, but also the mother could have passed it on. Now, I didn't have like serious issues. However, I had a thyroid condition, Hashimoto, which is an autoimmune. So then I was always thinking, well, you know, and I have had this like sketchy medical past of like early stage breast cancer and, you know, heart palpitations. And yeah, that was probably Lyme all of these years. So I also tell moms too, and I understand the tender subject, but you know, how have you been? Like, did you ever have really bad anxiety or depression or fatigue? Yes. I mean, it is really something to consider.
Yeah, it absolutely is. It absolutely is. And you know, it's, I think it's important that we like normalize in some way, like how common this is, right?
Yes.
It's really, yes. really common. And
yes.
The other thing I want to say in answer to your question that I think is really important on when to test kids, behavioral issues. So ADHD, not being able to pay attention in school, any, you know, OCD types of behaviors, you know, tics. You know, these types of things where it's like, oh, neurological, or they're getting in trouble at school, or they can't focus, like the things that you would be like, oh, maybe they need to be on Adderall, right?
Yep.
If you're seeing any of those types of things from an adolescent standpoint, that's the most common way that I've seen Lyme, mold illness show up in children is through these tics or these other types of, you know, the tics are more like neurological, but then, so it's like neurological or then these behavioral types of things. Really look out for that and be an advocate for yourself on that, because it's pretty amazing with children when we get to these root causes, children heal so quickly, you know, when we figure out why.
Yeah. It's so interesting that you said that, you know, children heal so quickly. When my kids were diagnosed, that is what my first doctor told us. And I wasn't seeing it. And I'm like, I just remember being like, please stop saying that. You know, kids are resilient. And, but here I am on the other side of the journey. And it is amazing what these kids can do. I mean, my son spent months lying on a couch and is like in full-fledged boxing now. And they accelerate just even academically. I mean, like I can, like you went through medical school and here you now are now writing books and active practice. And like, of course you can, because it's like you cleared those infections and it just, there's so much more that everybody can do. It is amazing, truly. Okay. So I agree with you. That is really when we should start thinking about testing. I know people might think that that's like a little, I don't even know what the word is, aggressive, you know, to test, but it's true. It really, really is true. Now, when do you suggest mold treatment? Because it was recommended to me when my kids weren't really responding to Lyme treatment. And then we got tested for mold, but in hindsight, kind of wish we would have done that sooner. When do you make the recommendation to test for mold?
Yeah, it's one of the things I want everybody that's listening to really understand is whether we're talking about Lyme or mold toxins, these are both great mimickers. Like they look like so many disease processes. And that's in part because of the widespread inflammation they can cause. So Lyme and mold look very, very similar. They can manifest as very similar symptoms in a lot of people. And it might be fibromyalgia in one and chronic fatigue in another, or autoimmune, but both of these disease processes can cause very similar symptom pictures. So for most people, I wind up recommending if you're having symptoms of the, you know, where somebody's saying test the one, test them both. You know, because from a standpoint of like root causes, these are both such big players and such big pieces. You know, if we're looking at a pie chart, it's like they can be very, very equal pieces of the pie contributing to your symptoms from a root cause perspective. And there's a genetic similarity. So like we have certain genetic anomalies that will make our immune system unable to identify certain toxins in our body. And when our immune system can't identify those toxins, it can't remove them. Okay. So we have toxins from mold leading to mold illness. Part of why Lyme disease makes us sick is not just the infection. It's actually the toxins that are released by the infection.
Yes.
And right. And this genetic anomaly that I'm talking about, where it's like our immune system doesn't see that these toxins there's certain anomalies where it's like, if the immune system doesn't see mold toxins, it actually doesn't see toxins from Lyme disease. So we can get worsening of both of these symptoms at, or both of these situations at the same time due to the genetic commonality. So it's very, very common to have them both. So for most people, I just say, test them both. Then we know what we're looking at and working with right from the beginning.
Wow. What you said is so true. And that happened in my kid.
Have you ever thought, I'd love to have a podcast just like this one? Well, I can help. My name is Matt Kundle, and everyone at my company, the Sound Off Podcast Network, had a hand in making this show. Whether it was about the sound, the discoverability, or that you're just enjoying the show, we are all about the detail. If you think you have a podcast in you, reach out to me via email, matt@soundoff.network, or check out the website and become one of the great podcasts we work with at soundoff.network.
Now, I know some people, because you said a genetic anomaly. I think that's what you had said.
Yes.
Now, some people go through genetic testing. Tell me your thoughts on genetic testing.
Genetic testing, I think, is a very cautious area we have to be, right? And I say we need to be cautious when we, we work with genes, is because it's really easy to see our genes and see what comes up from genetic testing. And all of a sudden be like, oh my gosh, I'm going to get Alzheimer's, or oh my gosh, I'm going to get ALS, or whatever it is, right? Like, it's really easy for that to happen. And the problem with that is, just because we have a gene doesn't mean the gene has turned on to get the disease, right? So I think there's value we can get out of it. We always want to remember it's really not just about our genes. It's about the genetic expression, the genes that are disease promoting turning on, and the disease that are health promoting turning off. That combination is really when the genes impact disease. So full genetic testing is, like, sometimes a warranted thing to do. It's nice to know what our tendencies are, and we can take preventative measures for that. But I also, recommend people doing that with caution. Now, we can, for the genetic anomaly that I'm talking about, it's called an HLA-DR, and we can just test for that, where it's like, oh, we don't want the whole profile. And that test is available at LabCorp, very, very common, accessible test. So that's one thing that people can do in order to determine if they have that gene and not have that whole genetic profile if they think that information in the brain is going to, cause them stress or that sort of thing.
Okay. Thank you. And thank you for clarifying that gene expression. Tell me a little bit about this one, because my kids have this, and I don't know really what it is. My kids have this, and I know other children with Lyme also do. And it's the mutation, the MTHFR mutation. I hope I'm saying that right.
Sure.
No, these are words that, get thrown at us. And my kid is even still on a supplement for it. And then I do feel bad. Like, I don't really know why, but I know it's supposed to help with this gene mutation. Can you break this down for us, please?
Yeah, absolutely. So MTHFR, so basically what we're talking about there is a genetic anomaly where the enzyme that actually is activating folate doesn't work correctly. So in order for vitamins and minerals to really work into our body, they have to be converted into these different forms, right? So we get them from our food, and then we actually activate them in our body. And so this enzyme for folate in the MTHFR example is not working. So the folate we get from our food is not able to be activated. Now, what's interesting is oftentimes what's given for that is a form of the active form of folate, which is called methylfolate. And basically that active form, which we can give that, and we can replace it. But what actually makes the gene work better and oftentimes actually fixes the problem more effectively in what we see in research is actually B2, not folate. B2 is riboflavin. And the reason for that is this MTHFR gene actually needs B2, that it codes for an enzyme, and the enzyme needs B2 in order to actually work and order to actually help with that folate conversion. So many people, if that gene comes up, are given methylfolate when they would actually be better served with B2. That's one thing to know. Another thing to know is there's a lot of people that, have renamed it using, bad cuss words.
And, yes, I have heard the bad cuss word.
I'm sure some people have heard that are listening, right? And they say that term you know, with the Couse words has come out because there's an orientation to MTHFR with, oh my gosh, I can't detox, right? And so people like hear this and they're like, detox is not working. Honestly, you guys, the body has so many different mechanisms for detox, and there's so many different parts of detox that this is one little component. And there's like, if you have all this other detox, these other detox processes in your body working, having MTHFR does not mean you can't detox. It's so much more complicated and complex than that. Now, we do see that, you know, some commonalities with having that gene. Sometimes we see behavioral issues because we do need that gene to convert to help us with, you know, production of things like serotonin and dopamine, these happy hormones that regulate our mood, right? So there are things to consider, and it is worth, you know, working on if that does come up, trying something like B2 riboflavin. You can always try the methylfolate if you want as well. But I would really encourage people to get out of this, oh my gosh, I can't detox. That's really not true. There's so much more happening with detox than just this particular genetic mutation.
Thank you. That sounds very empowering. And I took a couple of notes myself. So yeah, that's a very important point. Okay, let's chat a little bit about treatment. I know every time I have a podcast guest on and I tell people in advance, they're like, ask about this treatment, like all these specific treatment questions. So I have a couple in mind, but the first one is, what's your course of treatment for treating a child? Is it different than treating an adult? Or like what, tell me about like the different phases you think are the most beneficial for children.
Yeah, it is different than an adult in that because children are younger, right? And because they have not had, say, in a Lyme example, like most adults that make their way into my practice, it's not a lot of acute Lyme I work with. It's like much more chronic, right? Where it's like manifesting yes. All these disease processes. So adults have had, you know, these, say, Lyme, whatever their root causes are, they've had them oftentimes for years, decades, these sorts of things, versus children. Oftentimes we're like, okay, well, maybe it's been a few years, but it hasn't been decades. So what that means is there tends to be less widespread damage. So there is an element from root causes where I've talked about, you know, okay, well, Lyme and mold, they can affect the thyroid, they can affect the adrenals, they can affect all these different areas. I don't see that happen to children in the same way I see it happen to adults. It can, but usually there's just not enough time that somebody has had these diseases, the child's had these diseases where we don't oftentimes have to go down those routes of rebuilding these other hormonal systems in this example. So oftentimes with children, we can move more directly into actually treating the infections and the toxins because there's not this rebuilding phase with it. Now, as far as, you know, if we're talking about Lyme, we're talking about the bacteria Borrelia that causes Lyme as far as treatment itself of killing the infection, that part looks actually pretty similar to adults, other than the obvious of dosing for, I use a lot of herbal medicine. So other than like the dosing being a lot less for children, but as far as the products used and as far as like the way we use the products, the pacing, the pulsing, those types of things, it's that part is very similar.
Gotcha. Okay. Do you try to just use herbals with kids, or are there times where you will also do antibiotics?
About 1% of the time I use antibiotics. So it's never my first case thing. And it's because after, you know, working in this field for, you know, close to 15 years now, I'm really getting to a point where what I see is there's so much higher rates of recurrence with antibiotics. Now, if somebody has an acute situation where it's like, okay, I know I got bit yesterday, I got this rash, or I got the tick tested, I got my Lyme tested, like this is positive, you know, in an acute stage, that might be a reason to use an antibiotic, right? But in a chronic stage, the problem is Lyme has 3 different shapes. So it has these various ways it looks, right? So I like to describe it to my clients as, imagine going to a costume party and you're like, oh, you clearly identify that person. Okay, that's my friend Roger over there. Roger's Batman. Then Roger goes into the bathroom and Roger turns into a tiger, right? And like he comes out of the bathroom and you're like, where's Roger? And you can't see him anymore because he's not Batman anymore. He's now dressed as a tiger. That's what the Lyme bacteria does. It has these different shapes. And our immune system is like being at this costume party where the Lyme switches from Batman to tiger. The immune system's like, well, I don't see Batman, so I think my job's done. So point with this is that when it comes to using things like antibiotics for them to work in a chronic state, you actually have to give a different antibiotic for each costume, for each shape. So that's three different antibiotics. And for most people, in order to really do Lyme well, it's a, you know, 6 month from a chronic standpoint, minimum treatment. Well, our microbiome that we now know is not just in our gut, it's all over our body, right? It's in our skin, our respiratory tract, our sinuses. It's basically all over. And we know that our microbiome makes up most of our immune system. So if we're on three different antibiotics for 6 months, our immune system's destroyed because our microbiome's destroyed. And that's why I think we see so much more rate of recurrence for people with chronic Lyme and antibiotics. So that's why I've used herbal medicine more, because I've just seen so much less rates of recurrence. I like having everything in my toolbox. So there are occasional times where I see like people not getting well on herbal medicine. It's pretty rare in my experience. But in those situations, yes, I want to have tools for helping people. So antibiotics are on the table, but they're not my first go for all those reasons.
Got it. You know, and it's really common for any person who has Lyme that they have a co-infection, you know, Babesia, Bartonella, Mycoplasma. There's a bunch, right? My kids had several. Parents really get confused about that type of treatment. Do you treat them all at the same time? Do you do one at a time? And then if you do one at a time, which one do you start? When do you start folding in the next one? Tell us your thoughts and perspective on all of this.
So from a standpoint of mold, so if somebody is living in a moldy house, that's got to be number one. And that's one of the things, right, that most of us that work in this profession, I think pretty much everybody that I've talked to that works in this profession, really, it's like, even though we have different ways of treating and different philosophies, one of the things that is most common for people to get on the same page about is this, like, you got to get out of the moldy place. And so that's like, if whether it's Lyme disease and mold or just mold, either way, people don't tend to get better if they're in a moldy place and they're reacting to mold. And the other thing to say about that, you gotta work with a professional that knows about proper testing, because it's so common that people be like, well, I bought my house. I had an inspector come in. They did the test. I had no mold there. Well, inspectors, typically what they do, the common inspectors do air samples and they do humidity measures, where they're like air samples are comparing outdoor molds to indoor molds. And then they're actually comparing, you know, they're looking at humidity levels to see, okay, is there mold likely here? I cannot tell you the number of conversations I've had where everybody, you know, people are like, the inspector said, I'm fine, I'm good. And then when you use a more tests that are oriented to find different types of molds that are more in, you know, like cause injury to us as humans. And all of a sudden it's like wildly positive, like black mold, the dreaded black mold, Stachybotrys is its name. And this dreaded black mold is really, really, really heavy. So it does not suspend in air. So when these inspectors do air samples, humidity samples, and this mold is heavy, you're only going to find it if you do what's called a dust sample or a swatch sample, where they're actually taking a sample of surfaces, because that's where that type of mold is going to be found. And so just doing these common tests, you guys, do not think that you're fine. If you're having symptoms, if your children are having symptoms, you got to get proper testing done. And then, you know, to further answer your question on treatment order, some of it, as far as like, okay, there's a lot of infections, a lot of it has to be through understanding these diseases and tendencies. So it's like medicine is an art and a science, right? So we can use lab tests to say, okay, well, maybe somebody has Borrelia, Lyme disease, mold, and Bartonella, right? So they have, so let's say they have that, right? So Bartonella, another insect-borne infection. And so what we can do then is like, okay, well, what are people's big, you know, biggest symptoms that are driving them the most nuts? And sometimes we can make educated guesses. This is where the art comes in, that it might be a bigger piece of the, you know, say Bartonella could be a bigger piece of a puzzle than Borrelia. Like, for example, Bartonella causes a lot of people a lot of pain in their legs. Right? Leg pain and Bartonella, especially in the calves and the feet, is really a big symptom. So if somebody comes in and they're like, wow, this is like really debilitating, this leg pain, and they come up with multiple things, but the leg pain is what's driving them most crazy, I might say, let's start with Bartonella, because that is statistically speaking, the most likely cause of this. Now, Lyme causes widespread inflammation, right? So it doesn't mean that Lyme can't cause that. So this is where but it's more of a tendency of Bart, right? So that's where we have to take kind of the art of this and say, let's look at the picture. Let's look at the tendencies of these toxins and microorganisms, and then take everything we know and make our best educated guess around this is the order that works for, you know, particular individuals.
I think that is such a smart way to go. And I think, I do remember my first practitioner doing that with my own children of like, what is presenting the most symptoms that are problematic for you? And just kind of going after those. I mean, if that's what your body's screaming, if that's what's screaming from your body, then you go with that. But it takes a really skilled doctor and practitioner to kind of like have this conversation with the mom and the child together. But yeah, I completely agree. Wow. Okay, let's talk a little bit now about, you know, some of the things that helped you recover and what can help our children recover or help ourselves recover that is not medicine, that could be more lifestyle. You know, you had talked about the gene expressions and, you know, it's not necessarily going to happen. Something has to turn that on. And right away I was thinking, well, environmental factors, it's kind of like so I kind of want to talk about this component, like environmental factors, lifestyles. How much do you really think this comes into play when it comes to healing?
A ton from an environmental standpoint. And we're talking about like total body burden. It's really basically like drops in a mug, right? So it's like the more every drop that goes in a mug is a toxin, mug overfills, that last drop, all of a sudden we have symptoms. So the body is set up to be able to handle a certain amount. So we want to, from a lifestyle perspective, while we have toxins coming in from, say, mold and Lyme and any of these other infections, we're trying to get these things out, we also want to make sure that we are doing as much as we can lifestyle-wise to prevent more drops from going in the mug and take them out, right? So, you know, simple things like green, you know, cookware, you know, it's like, and, you know, as I'm talking about this stuff, you guys, like, don't, like, sometimes it can be overwhelming to be like, oh, I need to go and like replace all this stuff. Just keep stuff like this in mind. And like every time you're like, oh yeah, my pots are old, upgrade to some, you know, some chemical-free ones. And so that sort of thing. So, you know, green cookware is a good idea. Filtering your water is a good idea. Eating organic as much as possible. If you can eat all organic, go to the Environmental Working Group, EWG.org. And they have a list called the Dirty Dozen, the top worst foods to eat non-organic, and the Clean 15, the safest foods to eat non-organic. So that's easy ways if you're on a tight budget, you know, look at what you can do small-wise to, you know, at least eat more organic and more clean. Light at night, you know, like bright lights at night, especially the blue spectrum of light, destroys the melatonin. And sometimes we think we're sleeping, but we're not getting in as deep sleep because we've been on screens and we have bright lights in our house. So dimming the lights, like, you know, keeping low lit as much as possible. I know when you have kiddos running around, sometimes that's hard, but doing the best you can to get the light down, because that really impacts things. And like the sleep and maximizing sleep as much as possible, prioritizing that is huge, because we have this glymphatic, what's called the glymphatic system. It's basically like the detox, trash removing part of our brain. Well, that part works when we deep sleep. We don't deep sleep, we don't clean our brain. So super, super, super important. It's not just about, oh, like feeling great in the morning. It's actually about, let's get the junk out of the brain that's gotten in there. So that's really big. Moving, you know, as much as possible. All of these lifestyle things can play a really, really important role. And a lot of it is just about giving the body the stores and the reserves it needs while you're healing.
Yes. I love that. And I'm so with you. And I think it's great advice just to make little changes. It can be overwhelming. I mean, I know moms are just so desperate to heal their children. And I know that like I became a little crazy and neurotic. If I were to do it over again, I wouldn't have been so crazy about it, but just implementing like little things here and there is so helpful. And like overall, when I compare my lifestyle today to my lifestyle 4 years ago. Well, yeah, it's totally different, but we didn't get there like in a week. You know, it's like these slow, gradual changes. Well, tell us a little bit more about you have a book coming out, you have free downloads, you have an ebook series on your website. Let's talk a little bit more about the resources that you provide parents and other people who are healing from Lyme.
Yeah, absolutely. So my book is available right now for pre-order. It comes out middle of March. And basically, it's called It's Not in Your Mind. And we look at a lot of the disease processes we were talking about here, chronic hidden infections, chronic toxins, Lyme, mold, and then also all the other things that kind of go with this lifestyle, you know, heavy metals, what else could be going on? How do we need to build up your hormones and digestive tracts? And, you know, I've referred to it as basically a survivor's guide, because I walk through even things like how to find a doctor, how to interview them. What are you looking for, right? What are the answers that are going to tell you this person is a good fit for you? So I teach you how to do that as well. When it's time to jump ship, when like sometimes I see people, if like things are not working, it's so easy to be like, oh, I'm going to leave this doctor and find somebody else. So sometimes that's the right thing to do. Other times when we jump from doctor to doctor, nobody learns our case well enough. And if it's a difficult case, we really want to look, you know, find somebody that learns our body, our children's body, that sort of thing. So, you know, I really teach people to think through how to make these decisions, what questions they should be asking, when to stay with somebody, and when it is time to move on, because sometimes both of those things are the appropriate thing to do. So that book is available for you guys. And then the video ebook series that you can get on my website, I've made for the people that are just like, I'm never going to read a book. It's just, you know, it's not maybe never, but not right now in my life. Like I'm just too busy, right? And so if you're in that camp of people, the video ebook series is available as a free download on my site as a way of essentially saying, okay, I want this information. I want it in this other format, you know, to help my children and my family. And then of course, my medical practice you can find as well at mylymedoc.com. And I do telemedicine. I do options of variety of ways of working with people all over the world.
All over the world. That is amazing. And yeah, telemedicine opened up so many opportunities, not for just doctors, but for patients too, that, you know, that's what we use. And you can easily get your labs done locally. And yeah, it's a beautiful thing. Oh my gosh, Dr. Mueller, thank you so much for being on the podcast and sharing all of this information. I really love your philosophy, your principles, and just having your own personal story also does help when you're treating other people who have Lyme and mold and all of these complex conditions. I find that the information you provide is so empowering. Is there anything else, any last words or any like one big great piece of advice that you want to leave our audience with today?
There's hope and healing is the biggest thing. The body has an innate ability to heal. Sometimes I don't think we give it enough credit for the wisdom that the body has. So the message I always like to just leave with is like, be an advocate for yourself, be an advocate for your children. If there's symptoms, that's just your body's way of communicating a message, and keep being an advocate for yourself, because there is somebody, myself or somebody else out there, that is going to know how to interpret the signals that your body or your child's body is giving. And there is hope.
Amen. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for listening. If you felt inspired, please submit a review. More reviews help others find Very Happy Stories. And don't forget to subscribe and share this with someone else you know who could use a very happy story right about now. Until next time, have a happy day.
Come on a journey like no other, where you will discover many roads that will lead you to a happier, healthier, and more stress-free life. And the beauty is, you don't need any vacation time for this adventure. the journey will come to you. Join Avery Rich on your very own journey into yoga. Along the way, she will demystify yoga poses and guide you into a yoga posture or short sequence, all in less than 15 minutes. You have nothing to lose but stress. The Journey into Yoga podcast. It's not for people who like yoga. It's for people who don't like yoga. Follow or subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, or at averyrich.com.